Listen and stream the all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5 for the only talk that matter.
Okay, good afternoon, folks. Welcome once again to your lunchtime doctor, the most beloved doctor in TNT, answering, getting ready to answer all your medical questions. We're heard simultaneously, of course, here on Freedom 106.5 FM, Vibe City 105 FM, Sangit 106.1 FM, and of course, Sky 99.5 FM. My name is Bass, and we turn it over right now to our lunchtime doctor, Dr. Safiya Mohammed. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Bass, and good afternoon to every single one tuned in right here to your lunchtime doctor. As you know, this is the medical program where you get to call in and let's dissect those medical challenges. Let's pay some attention to the steps you need to take in order to optimize your health and your well-being. On this program, we talk about things from diabetes, hypertension, to gout, to arthritis, to just about any medical concern that is presenting and challenging your lifestyle right now. Let's see how we can provide some solutions. And to those who are also having their lunchtime plate, share to us what's on your lunchtime plate. Let's see what health habits you have picked up on this program and teaching others within your community. So without further ado, let's jump straight into the program and get those numbers for you to connect to myself, Dr. Safiya Mohammed, here for you on the Lunchtime Doctor.
All right, so our numbers to call, your numbers to call, 627-3223, 625-2257, and the numbers for the WhatsApp messages only 306-1065. And also feel free to call our message or other stations on the network, and they will forward it, forward your questions to us here on Freedom, right? 306-1065.
So yesterday, we continued the conversation on cancer. There's so many cancers that present within our community. The ones that are more common, breast cancer in females, prostate cancer in males. Yesterday, we deep dived into why is it that our male population may not feel so comfortable to get checked out. One important statistic that was shared, American Cancer Society shared that with our male population, not just Trinidad and Tobago, but all across the world, it may take as long as 18 months with a symptom before they actually present. But we're here to let you know, instead of toughening it out, let's get it checked out. Because especially when it comes to cancer, if it's diagnosed in stage one, stage two, prognosis is considerably better and you can be responsible for saving a life, yours.
Definitely. Once again, folks, our numbers, the call 627-3223-625-2257 and 306-1065. Questions are coming in here on the WhatsApp. Good afternoon. What can you do if you have anxiety and it is very bad?
So with anxiety, first and foremost, let's acknowledge that just about every single person experiences anxiety at some point in time. I would suggest identifying the trigger, knowing what brings about that anxiety. So let's do the awareness. It may be anxiety because of deadlines, work-related stress. It may be anxiety about managing financial health. Many times our financial disturbances is what causes or pivots that anxiety, or not having the proper coping mechanism. A simple exercise like breathing deeply, being able to talk it out with someone, being able to have that support network. But first and foremost, identifying that you're not alone. Find someone you can chat with. Or as you always, when persons feel that alone in that anxiety moment, take a pause. Pause. Rather than react, respond to the situation. Quite often, we jump into reaction, and that may not always be the correct response. My own son, he's an autistic child, and he's writing the SEA exam. On a daily basis, he has these anxieties. I empower him with different breathing techniques, meditation, to bring himself to that level of calm when he starts to feel anxious. Sometimes a prayer might work. Sometimes just powering through with a quote, a meditation, all of those things can help resolve the anxiety.
All right, we have a question here. Of course, the phone call is coming in at 625-2257. Hello, good afternoon. Welcome to the Lunchtime Doctor.
Yeah, good afternoon. I want to ask the doctor, is it aloes, taking aloes in the morning, is it good or bad? Yeah, eating aloes, yeah. Thank you.
Thank you so much for that question. That is one of the what we call superfoods right here in Trinidad and Tobago, but of course, everything in moderation. Some people, however, rather take the natural things and not take their medications. Let's be able to balance both. Yes, you can have aloes every day, but ensure if you are, unfortunately, with some sort of non-communicable disease, be it diabetes or hypertension, you're also integrating your normal medications into that routine.
Okay, Doc, but is aloes itself a blood thinner?
No. Persons tend to perceive that there are indeed thrombotic properties of aloes. Mm-hmm. There isn't enough research to support the fact that aloes is a blood thinner. Mm-hmm. It certainly has a lot of antioxidant properties and certainly supports the immune system.
All right. Thank you very much. Let's take another call here. Hello, good afternoon. Welcome to the Lunchtime Doctor.
Yes, sir. Yes, good day. I would like to ask the doctor, 71 years of age and 36 years I had an hysterectomy, and what I want to know, why at this age, why my breast keeps pulling and having pains and pains on my body, it comes and goes and then I feel a heat. What is the cause of that?
Okay, did you get that, doctor?
Yes, certainly. Okay. Thank you so much for calling in about that. Now, I don't believe the hysterectomy is directly related to the pains that you're getting throughout the body. With, at this age, 71, the natural aging process does present with a number of arthritic pains. However, the pain within the breast is one that I'm still concerned about, and I'd encourage you to get that checked out. It may not be breast cancer, because at this age, you may not have any lumps or that nodules that may present at this age. However, let's get that breast pain checked out. You can start and do a simple home examination to see if there are any associated lumps or nodules, but move that forward to a conversation with your healthcare professional and let's get to the bottom of that pain throughout your body.
All right. Folks, once again, you're listening to the Lunchtime Doctor, Freedom 106.5 FM, Sangit 106.1 FM, Vibe City 105, and of course, Sky 99.5 FM. WhatsApp messages now at 3061065. Good afternoon. What are the signs or symptoms of a bad prostate, or that it may be acting up and needs attention?
Good question. So let's look at how you're able to pass urine. What we see in our prostate cancer patients or in patients with benign prostatic hyperplasia, that's an enlarged prostate, they have problems with passing urine normally. They may feel an increased frequency, they may want to pass urine more often than usual, or they may feel that they're not emptying the bladder properly, so it becomes a dribble instead of a normal stream. Another problem that they may see, a sign, very important red flag, is if you're seeing blood in the urine. Anytime you're seeing blood or there's any sort of pain on passing urine, these are your three red flags: pain on passing urine, an inappropriate or not a normal stream, and then of course blood on passing urine. Please get it checked out. But don't wait until you see these signs and symptoms. If there's a family history of prostate cancer, any sort of prostatic disease, please get it checked out from as early as age 40. Trinidad and Tobago have a high incidence of prostate disease, and that's because of our Afro-Trinidadian population. So let's make sure we try to curb it before it even presents.
And another question coming up here on the WhatsApp. What? Good afternoon, doctor. What causes vertigo? Vertigo. Or do they mean vitiligo? Vertigo.
Yeah, no, well, it's two different things.
Oh, okay.
The vitiligo is a skin condition, but I think what they're asking specifically is the symptom or the sensation when one may feel dizzy. So that's vertigo. There are actually several things that can be causing that. If there's a within the air, there is fluid within the middle air. If there's any infection on the middle air, that can present as vertigo. And most often, persons are not recognizing that balance starts within the air canal. Vertigo can also be a sign or a symptom of some of the side effects of some medications. If one is taking hypertensive medication and they may not have either eaten properly or just had their medications as first thing, they may feel that dizziness, that vertigo. So they may get hypotension, the blood pressure may go down, and they may present with vertigo. Also, we see vertigo in any patient that is hyperthyroid. When the thyroid levels go really high, you may present with this dizziness. So there's several things that can cause it. Even headaches may present with vertigo. All in all, it is a symptom that will not go away. So you must get it checked out.
And once again, folks, 627-3223, 625-2257. You're listening to The Lunchtime Doctor. Dr. Safia Mohammed. Let's take a call here. Hello, good afternoon.
A very good afternoon to you, Doctor. Doctor, why all of a sudden some people are unable to walk? All of a sudden some people are unable to walk. Thank you.
Thank you so much, caller. Good question. Now, persons may, that all of a sudden immediately makes me think of, they may have a stroke or a transient ischemic attack. And because persons wouldn't go from normally being able to function and mobile to then all of a sudden unable to walk. If there's any sort of problems with the limb, the first thing that will come to mind is there an impending stroke? A stroke may be a clot in the brain and within the cerebral vasculature, and that can definitely affect your lower motor functions. It may be also a lower motor neuron disease. That, however, would be more of a chronic manifestation happening over time rather than something acutely. Now, when it comes to walking, it may even be related to some sort of musculoskeletal injury. And again, that's more over time, not necessarily something acute. But if someone is perfectly functioning normally, and then the next day they cannot walk, the first thing I'd want to rule out is a stroke formation.
All right, let's go to the WhatsApp here. Good day. Is it possible to get a test to ultrasound or x-ray for the prostate?
Most definitely. That's one of the most diagnostic tests that we do in terms of identifying if there's prostate disease. We typically do the ultrasound and, of course, a couple blood investigations that are minimally invasive. If we do need to go further, then it may be a biopsy, but again, that's minimal invasion. I again would like to encourage, if anyone is seeing any signs and symptoms, get it checked out by your healthcare professional, your GP. You may be referred to a urologist, which is a specialist that takes care of the prostate gland. Hope that answers the question.
All right, let's get another call here. Hello, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, doctor. I noticed that there's a dryness in my face, but I cannot use, when I wash, well, I use any tap water, right? I cannot use the expensive moisturizers. Could you recommend a mild one? And is it possible that if you use the rainwater instead of tap water, it wouldn't have the dryness of the face with the soap, please?
So thanks so much for asking that. Any moisturizer, and they are inexpensive ones, will certainly help ease that dryness. But let's dial it back even more. Let's look at what you're using as the cleansing products. Harsh soaps on the whole can easily dry out that skin. Also, changing temperatures. If you're going from, say, air-conditioned to heated environments, that's going to dry out your skin much quicker than before. Also, if there's any sort of atopic conditions, eczema, that's going to present with dryness. you want to do your face washes at least twice a day and use gentle exfoliants. Sometimes we think we have to wash the face several times a day, not realizing that we're going to be removing the natural oils of the face, and that's what's going to also maintain that moisturizing. So I hope that answers the question. Yes, you can switch to the rainwater, but I'd rather you just use normal tap water and a mild soap or cleansing agent.
All right. Good afternoon, doctor. My brother is diabetic and has kidney problems, but has a lot of joint pain. What can we do to help ease the pain? He is 48 years old.
Well, as you mentioned that there are kidney problems, we certainly would like to know what the creatinine level or the glomerular filtration rate, what does that look at? Because some persons with kidney dysfunction, those that are complicated by diabetes, they tend to have an exacerbated, there's a lot of pain with the joints. What can you do? Stay consistent with your anti-diabetic medication. You want to incorporate some level of physiotherapy or level of exercise. Just those gentle stretches on the joint will help relieve that pain. You may even want to utilize NSAIDs, that's your non-steroidal anti-inflammatory. Those medications will help ease the joint discomfort. But first and foremost, cornerstone is being evaluated and incorporating some level of exercise. You know, Bas, we have so many diabetic patients.
Yes.
And instantly they think that when they have a diagnosis, it means they no longer have a normal quality of life. When you have a diagnosis of diabetes, now more than ever, you need to ensure you're incorporating some level of mobility, mobilization to prevent that sedentary lifestyle. When one becomes sedentary, that's when the joint pains becomes worsened. So even if it means just planting in the garden, nurturing some plants, walking up and down stairs, start simple, but get some steps in, get some exercise in, get some stretches in, regardless of your age.
All right, definitely. Good advice there, doctor. We have a message coming here from our sister station, Sangeet. Apple cider, is it good for the blood pressure?
Most definitely. You see, there are a host of health benefits for apple cider, but we will want to take note for those who are diabetic. There is a high glycemic index to it. Yes, it's good for your blood pressure, but if you're on medications for your blood pressure, you can allow the apple cider to balance or add to it, not necessarily be a supplement or substitute for your medication. Yes, apple cider is one of those drinks you can add every day, but in moderation.
All right, we have another question here coming down from Vibe City 105. How long does it take for contrast dye to flush out of your system after a CT scan?
Great question. That will flush within a 24-hour period. We tend to ensure that just after you finish your CT scan, you're having some sort of hydration. And the way we actually insert that dye, it goes into the venous structure. So it's not necessarily within the urological system, as in pass, you won't see the dye being passed out in your urine. It will be broken down within the system and then reabsorbed and flushed out. So within the 24 hours, it typically is flushed out.
All right, 12:25 on time. Of course, folks, once again, you're listening to the Lunchtime Doctor, heard here on Freedom 106.5 FM, Sangeet 106.1, Sky 99.5 FM, and of course, Vibe City 105. Numbers to call: 627-3223, 625-2257, and your numbers to message only, not call, message, WhatsApp messages only, 306-1065. Good afternoon, doctor. What causes stiffness and coldness in the legs?
So many times we have our aged population waking up in the middle of the night and feeling this stiffness. It could be a few things. Well, dehydration is at the top of that list. Many times with especially our diabetic population, they may take their medications earlier than usual and they may not have a proper meal in the evening. I encourage all my diabetic population to have a bottle of water close by and just kind of have a little bit throughout the night. You may also want to ensure you have some level of comfort, proper sleep hygiene. Sometimes our our population that are hypertensive or those that talk about poor circulation, they may need to have their legs elevated. Those that are keeping it at the same level, they may wake up with that tightness within the legs, and that's actually pooling of the fluid in the lower limbs. So when you have your legs elevated, that tends to help. You know, you're helping gravity along to prevent the circulation, to prevent the accumulation of the fluid around the lower limbs that leads to this tightness or that pain that develops in your lower limbs. So there are a few things, well, but those are your two most common ones that you can address right away at home from today.
All right, let's take a call here. Hello, good afternoon. Welcome to the Lunchtime Doctor.
Yeah, doctor, say again. Doctor, how beneficial is sleep to the human body? How beneficial is sleep to the human body? Thank you.
You know, I'd be a big hypocrite in answering this question because I'm not, unfortunately, one that gets a lot of sleep in. But let's jump into the health benefits and probably be a reminder for me as well. First and foremost, sleep is incredibly beneficial. We know this. Quality sleep is much more important than quantity sleep. Sometimes you may be lying on bed for 3-4 hours, 5-6 even, and may not get quality sleep. A good way of answering how important sleep is let's think of how they actually punish some criminals by sleep deprivation. So think of what sleep does or lack of sleep does to your body. The next day you absolutely cannot function. You're not as focused. You're not as cognitively, you may be cognitively impaired. Your memory may not be on point. So sleep is crucially important. And that's to everyone tuning in. It's so important that we find the balance and ensure we are replenished, rejuvenated by our sleep every single day. And for the days that you can't, let's say those frontline workers, or one like myself who works sometimes 24 hours, then find the days to replenish your sleep debt. Be it middle of the week, weekend, ensure you allow your body the time to rejuvenate. So thank you, caller, for reminding us on the importance of sleep.
Yes, a reminder for me as well. Doctor, what is shingles and how is it caused? How could it be treated? Thank you.
So shingles is one that we see in patients if they've had what we say a herpes zoster previous virus, or if they've had chicken pox. Now, a person may have had that in their earlier lifetimes, and then later on in life, they present with just shingles. It tends to be a very painful rash, and it tends to develop on either the face or on specific dermatomes of the body. It can indeed look almost like chickenpox again, and it's quite contagious. So if one detects shingles or it looks like pustular type a rash that's very itchy and painful, then I would suggest take a couple of pictures, send it to your doctor, because please, you don't want to present knowing that this rash can indeed be contagious. And how can you actually treat it from at home? You can apply those topical moisturizers. You also have the moisturizers that tend to ease that pain. You want to also do some sort of antihistamine, and of course you want to ensure that you stay connected to your healthcare provider. In some cases, we may need to administer antiviral medications, especially if it's an aged population. So I hope that answers the question. Shingles is not something I would ever play around with if you think you're presenting with it.
All right. Here's a popular question again about those cramps. Hi, doctor. How to alleviate cramps in your legs when you rise from resting?
You know, we really see a lot of patients like that. We get numbness, tingling, leg cramps. First and foremost, let's check and see, and we mentioned it before, our hydration status. Let's also take a look at some of our multivitamins. Some of that leg cramps or the numbness or tingling happens because of a thiamine, a vitamin B deficiency. There are a couple of medications on the market that are readily available and have been proven with enough research to alleviate some of that leg cramps if it is indeed a thiamine or B6, 12, B6 or B12 deficiency. So you can ask your healthcare provider about it. However, if this leg cramps is affecting you on a daily basis, please don't sit on it. Get it checked out, because we don't want it worsening, especially if it's a neural condition developing.
Folks, you're listening to The Lunchtime Doctor. Good afternoon, Doctor. What is the difference between an antibiotic and a prebiotic?
Great question. Now, a prebiotic is absolutely different from an antibiotic. The antibiotic is what we use to treat bacterial type infections. So it counters a huge amount of bacteria within your body, and it helps strengthen your immune system in waging that war against the amount of bacteria. Your prebiotics now are useful for the gut, particularly for the normal peristalsis, your normal functioning of gut, because within the normal gut flora, there are indeed normal bacteria that's consistent. However, when someone may have gastro, they literally shed away their normal gut flora, and that's where the prebiotic comes into play to replenish what has unfortunately been lost by the body. So they're two completely different things, different benefits. Antibiotics are definitely prescribed by your doctor. The prebiotics is one you can even purchase over the counter. Hope that answers the question.
All right, doctor, good afternoon. What is good for a really bad cracked heel?
Oh, very important question. We see this in a lot of our diabetic population. They have cracked heels. We see this across most of our male population who do not take good care of their feet. First and foremost, get yourself a pedicure or even just massaging at home. Those calluses that develop on the feet, on the heel in particular, can become very painful if they're not well attended to. So start with some moisturizing. Start with investing with probably a nice file at home. You can shave off those extra bits of calluses. But if you are diabetic, I would recommend you see a podiatrist or you get a proper pedicure, because with our diabetic population, simple cuts can lead to damaged skin. You don't want to become the surgeon. You want to ensure a professional is taking care of your feet. Hope that answers the question.
All right. Freedom 106.5 FM. Of course, you listen to The Lunchtime Doctor. Also heard on Sangit 106.1, Sky 99.5, and Vibe City 105 FM. Our numbers to call 625-6273-223. The WhatsApp messages only 306-1065, and feel free to message our other stations listening and they will forward your questions to us. We go back to the WhatsApp. Doctor, what is the health benefits of taking aspirin?
So for all those who have been prescribed aspirin, it most likely be that you have some sort of high blood pressure or some sort of hypercoagulable state where the platelets tend to be clotting. Aspirin is what we call an antithrombotic. It breaks down those clots. Some persons may be placed on aspirin because of a family history of myocardial infarction, as heart attacks or stroke. The aspirin, that medication itself, tends to help breaking down those thrombotic or those clots within the body that can now predispose you to a stroke, predispose you to a heart attack, or if that clot goes to the legs, you get a DVT, a deep vein thrombosis. However, aspirin, you shouldn't be taking aspirin if it's not prescribed by a healthcare professional. And now, those who are taking aspirin, we have the enteric-coated aspirin to help ease off those who have reflux. Because aspirin itself, overuse of aspirin, overuse of this non-steroidal and anti-inflammatory drug, NSAID, can lead to those peptic ulcer formation. So you want to manage as well how often you're taking your aspirin. You're using only 81 milligrams as your preventative dose. And of course, let it be prescribed by your healthcare professional.
Okay, doctor, another question here. I have a stent and on cardiac meds. I'm on cardiac meds 4 years now. Can I still donate blood? I'm a regular blood donor.
Yes, you certainly can. And thank you so much for still donating blood. Yes, having a stent, being on cardiac medications, is not an inhibitory factor to donating blood. But here's what really is. If you go to the blood center and your blood pressure is elevated, that would be an inhibitory factor. If your blood count is lower, say less than 10 HB, your HB is less than 10 milligrams per deciliter, that would be an inhibitory factor. However, if you are healthy and maintaining your medication, maintaining your blood pressure, you certainly can continue donating blood. And thank you. I want to use this quick little opportunity to encourage anyone who can become a blood donor. It's the best gift you can give to someone, because quite often in our banks, we are very depleted with blood. So whoever and wherever you, whenever you can and become a blood donor, please do so.
You know, Dr. Diz, there's always this rumor that I've always heard, if you have a tattoo, that you cannot give blood. Is that true?
So that's a great question. It's not a rumor. It's a fact. However, our blood bank has been changing their criteria. And that was something discussed, actually, I believe last year, June, is when they changed those criteria. So now having a tattoo is no longer an inhibitory factor for giving blood. Previously, however, for many, many years, within our Trinidad and Tobago blood donation constitution, it was one of the reasons why persons could not donate blood. However, globally, it's been shown that it does not impact upon the blood. We still screen the blood. We still do a number of questions, and that would be more the screener than the tattoo. So good question. There is, on your Ministry of Health website, you can go straight to blood donation and get a whole host of questions. You can actually even be pre-screened. They're moving, if it's one aspect of Ministry of Health technology that's moving forward, is indeed the blood donation unit. And we are Guardian Health. Health Plus was actually part of that innovation. We dealt with a lot of questions in helping, making sure that the criteria list was a lot more accessible to our general population who wants to donate blood.
All right.
So thanks so much for asking about that.
Yes. All right. Let's take a call right here. Hello. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Doctor. It's Sonia Onyx-Surgery.
I heard the word hernia,
yeah,
and I heard the word surgery.
Mm-hmm.
So I presume he's asking if surgery is the only way to cure or to fix a hernia.
Yeah.
Most likely, depending on where the location of the hernia is, we may need to operate. However, there are several hernias that we treat on a management procedure, as in it's a look and wait based on how bad or what is that protuberance. A hernia tends to be some part of the body system. You can have an umbilical hernia that protrudes, and that does not affect your daily functioning at all. So it doesn't need to be treated surgically. However, if it's a testicular hernia, an inguinal hernia, then those we may need to treat, because it may cause pain, it may cause problems with gut functioning. So it really depends on the type of hernia, the location, and how it is affecting your quality of life.
All right. Good day, doctor. Is a CFR of 8 good number for your kidneys?
Thank you so much for asking. So that is your chronic filtration rate. I'm not too sure what the actual unit is, and I'd want to certainly know a little bit more about your creatinine level before we can say what is good and what is not good. However, what we do suggest is, when you do see your doctor at your next appointment, you not only know your CR, your creatinine value, but you also know your glomerular filtration rates, as a GFR. That will give you a better idea of how your kidney is functioning.
All right, let's take a call here. Good afternoon. Oh, sorry, we lost that one. 6273-223-625-2257. You're listening to The Lunchtime Doctor. Let's get another one here from Vibe City 105 FM. Another question here. Can a very cold environment, like sleeping in a cold room or lack of sunlight, cause shortness of breath when waking up?
Not necessarily. So cold environment can certainly cause some sort of changes within the normal functioning. You might get some pain, you might get discomfort, but a cold environment should not present with shortness of breath. If there is shortness of breath, then I certainly would want to evaluate further, because that's not really dealing directly with your respiratory system. So that one I'll need a little bit more information on in order to pinpoint an answer.
All right, let's get this call here. Hello, good afternoon. Welcome to the Lunchtime Doctor.
Hi, good afternoon. Thank you for repeating the phone number. Good day, Doc. I would like to know, what's the oldest age to give blood, male or female? And if one goes to the bathroom regular during sleep, could you say how can that be stopped? Urinary-wise.
Yeah, thank you so much for both questions. Very important questions.
I will listen to that.
Once you're going to the bathroom and you're finding that there's increased frequency, we need to get that checked out, male or female. It could be a problem with a urinary tract infection. With our males, it could be an early sign of prostate disease. Now, when it comes to giving blood, we've had patients as aged up to, say, in their mid-60s giving blood. There isn't necessarily a cutoff age when it comes to on the age side, but there's more so a health level. We'd look at once your hemoglobin is above 10, once there's no high blood pressure, once there isn't any sort of complication, say post-surgery or anything like that, when it comes to giving blood. So on the Ministry of Health website, there's a whole list of criteria. I'll certainly grab it, and come Monday, we can go through all of that criteria and discuss it a little bit further when it comes to giving blood.
All right, lots of questions about giving blood. Here's another one. If you are diabetic, can you donate blood?
Yes, you certainly can. I'm loving that these questions are here. Our blood bank is really depleted. So there's so much myths about giving blood. So that, in answering that question, if you're diabetic, yes, you certainly can still give blood. However, stay consistent with your medication. That morning before you go to give blood, please have a normal meal. Take your medications. You know, persons mix up giving blood with taking blood. So when they have to go to take blood or to actually be investigated, they tend to be fasting that morning. However, when they have to go and now give blood, we've had patients turn up and they're fasting, and then they realize that all of a sudden their sugar levels are low, they're feeling dizzy, and they no longer can give blood.
Right.
So that's not the case. If you're going to give blood, have a proper meal, proper hydration, take your medications as normal. You don't need to be fasting to give blood.
All right. Is there any way to know your blood type? Like before, is there any machine or mechanism to know your blood type?
Well, what we do at the blood banks is once they take a couple mils of blood, they will tell you your hemoglobin count and your blood type. So you can actually do that in any lab, but at the blood bank, it's one of the preliminary blood investigations that's done.
All right, okay. I was just wondering, like at home, if there's something at home that you could do to,
that's a hematological investigation.
All right, okay. Let's take another call here. Hello, good afternoon.
Hello, good afternoon. I'd like to know what is the best for chronic epilepsy.
Okay, tonic-clonic, right. So first and foremost, any patients are diagnosed with epilepsy, that's a seizure disorder to all those who are tuned in. Tonic-clonic is one of the types of seizure disorder where it explains how the limbs tighten up. So it almost becomes like something that's hypertoned. And then you go into these spasms that call the clonus. The medications are very specific. It must be prescribed, however, by a neurological doctor. At least your first line types of medication should be prescribed. We typically would want to do an investigation. It's called the EEG. And an EEG is the electroencephalogram. The one we do for the heart is your ECG. The EEG is the one that we look at the brain waves. When we get that investigation based on the frequency of the seizure, the age of the patient, based on any other comorbidities. That's how we prescribe a specific medication. There are a host of neurological medications that we use to treat seizures, but it's not one global type medication. It's very much a unique approach. So your healthcare professional, go to them, let them do the investigations, and they will be able to pinpoint a proper neurological medication for you to manage these seizures.
All right. Lunchtime Doctor, you're listening. Good afternoon. Hi, Doctor. I recently became a vegan due to side effects from my menses. All right. And my skin is becoming loose. Can you advise me?
So thank you so much for asking about that. Vegan meals, however, or vegan lifestyle shouldn't necessarily affect your collagen within your skin. However, there is a collagen supplementation available as an over-the-counter medication that you can now integrate. There's specifically one called chondroitin sulfate and your glucosamine. They tend to obviously help the chondroitin, especially within the joints, and help encourage more collagen development within the skin structure. I would suggest as well, if you think that you are having that looser skin, go see a dermatologist or just go see your healthcare professional. They'll certainly be able to better evaluate and prescribe what's needed.
All right, let's take a call here. Hello, good afternoon. Welcome.
This boy, what's up?
Doc? Cool man.
Label man here. I also wanted to know, right? Okay, so the blood group is two different groups, A positive and O positive and A negative and O negative. Is that right?
Yes.
The question is, I also wanted to know, what is the difference? I see A positive. Mm-hmm. What is the difference between the four groups? I'll listen out here. Thanks a lot.
Excellent question. So there are two more groups. Let me mix it up a little bit more. There's also blood group B. So you can have a B positive or a B negative. And then there's a combination now of AB positive or AB negative. So it's actually eight different blood groups. What's the difference? It's actually a genetic structure. So the blood group, first of all, is a protein, and then it's an antigen attached to it. And it's really like your genetic structure. So if your parent, let's take a basic one. If both parents are O positive, then chances are you are also O positive. But if one parent is A and one parent is O, A, blood group A and blood group B are the more dominant ones. So your blood group is most likely blood group A or blood group B. The only time you will have or inherit the blood group O is if both parents are O positive or O negative. The very, very rare one is your O negative. We call those our universal donors. And however, whatever your blood group is, it's important that you do know your blood group so that in case you ever need blood, that you're easily able to give that information. It's as important as your ID information, okay? So to all who's listening, and next time you're checking your bloods, ask them to do your blood group as well. I hope that answers your question, sir.
All right, beautiful. 10 minutes away from 1 o'clock, you're listening to The Lunchtime Doctor, 627-3223, 625-2257. And for WhatsApp only, 306-1065. Let's take a call. Hello, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, doctor. Could you explain how ankle exercises are being done? Thanks.
Oh, excellent question. So ankle exercises is one you can do anytime, obviously not when you're driving, right? Let's just say you're at your desk sitting and you're typing away. Incorporate some sort of stretching at the ankle. I'm going to try to help you imagine them. You want to be able to rotate your ankle. So you can do circumduction, that's rotating inward, or circumvention, rotating outward. You want to do exercises where you can imagine pressing a brake or releasing the brake. So you're thinking of the ankle joint and every way you can indeed exercise that. So it's pressing, pulling it back, and of course, rotating around the joint itself. Those tend to help tremendously. If you're standing, you can even do simple exercises like tippy toes. Just getting your ankles moving will help ease any sort of pain or fluid accumulation at the ankles. And for those who are tuned in and they realize that they're at the desk quite often, if probably every 20 minutes you can just get up and stretch, walk around a little bit, walk up and down a step even, that will help improve any sort of circulation disorders you may have. Hope that answers your question.
It's got a question here about water. Good afternoon, doctor. I am a diabetic and I have high blood pressure problems. Does chlorine in water raise your blood pressure? Because when I drink pipe-borne water, my blood pressure rises because I cannot afford to buy, you know, bottled water. So the question is,
that's okay. You don't need to have bottled water. And no, the chlorine in the water will not raise your blood pressure. That's a huge myth. We do want you to be consistent with your medication and continue hydrating. Dehydration, however, if you're not well hydrated, that can raise your blood pressure. And it's okay if you can't afford bottled water. I drink water just out of the tap. If you want to make it a little bit healthy, you can just boil it and allow it to cool. And you can keep that in your fridge. And that in itself, I personally like drinking boiled water. That is part of my daily routine. Hope that answers your question.
All right, let's get a call here. Hello, good afternoon.
You know something? I feel, Doc, it has certain blood group people will be more difficult for you to get sick. Okay, like I will not be vaccinated. I do take no vaccination. COVID, nothing. And I among people without mask, with mask, since in the early, and I not get this thing. Like I feel my immune system block such a way. I know I still get it too, but I believe certain blood group people will not get COVID. Thanks a lot.
So thanks so much. We don't have data to support that in terms of a blood group preference of those who have some sort of COVID shield. But in your case, it may just be you're attending to your immune system. You're probably eating the right foods, making sure you have a balanced life, making sure you probably have a lower stress levels. So your risk for COVID is lower. You may not have a non-communicable disease. Remember, like any virus, the body in a weakened state is indeed more predisposed to an infection than another. So that may be the gist of it and not necessarily a blood group. Hope that answers the question.
All right, lunchtime doctor, let's get another question here. What causes a shocking pain under my left foot? I have no medical complications.
So I'm glad that you know that there are no medical complications, but I want to encourage you, if you're feeling shocking pains under your feet, it may be a diabetic neuropathy related, or it may be something called calcaneal spurs. It depends on what your footwear is. It depends on how often some persons walk, kind of abnormal. They walk more on their heel than walking on the balls of their feet. So they develop calcaneal spurs more than usual. And if there are any calluses or those spurs, that can certainly trigger off that quote-unquote shocking pain.
Okay, 6 minutes away from 1 o'clock, you're listening to The Lunchtime Doctor, Sangit 106.1 FM, Freedom 106.5 FM. Of course, Freedom, 106.5 FM, Sky 99.5 and Vibe City 105 FM. Good day, Doctor. I had my daughter 5 years ago, and since then, I don't get any pain when my period comes. Is that normal?
So great question. I'm glad you're not getting pains when you have your period, but sometimes that may still continue even after, based on what the menstrual cycles can be like. In your case specifically, I would want to ensure that you're also probably say tracking your menstrual cycles, because it may be you're close to that perimenopausal time. And within that perimenopausal time is when the cycles tend to ease off. You may not be getting the pains at all, but you're going into that different stage of your life. Hope that answers the question.
All right. Good day, doctor. Very informative program. What causes low blood count of 10, and what can I do?
So a low blood count is one that can be affected if there's some sort of anemia, an iron deficiency anemia. It could even be someone with some sort of autoimmune disease. There are quite a few things. Even someone with poor nutrition, that can also affect their blood count. I would start with attending to one's nutrition, including a little bit more those green leafy vegetables, and you'll certainly see that improvement or that change in your blood count.
All right, 4 minutes away from 1 o'clock. Let's get some calls in there. 627-3223, 625-2257. If not, we'll go back to the WhatsApps. We have a lot of WhatsApp messages. Hi, Doc and host. What causes fibroids, and what can be treated? How can it be treated?
So fibroids is one that we see so often in Trinidad. But I want to make sure we're getting word correctly. Fibroid. We've had patients come and say, Doc, I have fibroids. And then it's a completely different conversation. Fibroid is a growth in the female population within the reproductive anatomy. So you may see part of the uterus, there may be a growth. It's almost like a nodular formation on the endometrial lining. It may be different parts of it. It may even be within the cervical lining. One may present with a lot of bleeding, a lot of pain, even pain on having intercourse. If there's any sort of intermenstrual bleed, please get it checked out. Hope that answers the question.
Right, and this is another situation. Yeah, Doctor, I have a salty and bitter taste in my mouth. Could this be from thyroid meds? I have an underactive thyroid. That's a caller from New York.
So great question. Thyroid medications does leave a change within the oral structure. There's some medications, even some of your diabetic medications, metformin. I remember the first time I had to take metformin and there's this bitter aluminum type taste. So yes, some of the medications can have that strange sensation within the oral cavity. Have the conversation with your healthcare professional. If it is something that is really affecting your quality of life, or it's affecting your general daily utilization of the medication, because there most likely are substitutes or different enteric-coated forms to minimize that sensation in the mouth.
Okay, let's take a call here. Good afternoon. Hello?
Good afternoon. If you have cold feet, both day and night, what you can use?
Okay, so cold feet both day and night, that may mean some sort of thermoregulation problem. At first and foremost, you see that hormone that we just mentioned there, thyroid? Thyroid is one of the more important hormones that regulates so many different metabolic functions in your body. I'd want to get that checked out, because a hypothyroid patient can present with these cold feet. You also want to make sure you check your basics. Check the diabetes, check the cholesterol, because if there's any sort of plaque formation within the lower vasculature, within the lower limbs, that can also worsen that predisposition or the feeling of the sensation of cold feet. So I hope that answers your question.
All right, just a few more minutes. If there's a couple seconds to go. Let's see if we could do this one quickly. Can a high triglyceride of 237 and a high cholesterol of 133 cause neuropathy? Can walking get those levels down?
So yes, that cholesterol level 230, how much ever, over 200 is quite elevated. I want that level down. Yes, exercise. In your case, I'll want to recommend moderate to brisk exercise. So that's not just your normal walking. Include a little bit of jogging. Even some swimming would help in bringing down that cholesterol level. You definitely want to pay attention to nutrition. That is key in bringing down your cholesterol, in addition to whatever medication, lipid-lowering medication, your doctor may place you on.
Okay, well, doctor, that's it for today. It's now 1 p.m.
Look how quickly this hour just flies by. Yep. I want to take the time to thank every single person who sends in their question, who takes the time to call. Because in you being brave and asking your question, you're helping someone else tuned in out there to answering these questions. On Monday, we're going to talk more about that blood donation. I'm going to hold everyone who asks those questions, sending more of those questions about the blood donation. We can chat more about it on Monday. a warm thank you to our sponsors that make this program happen and everyone on the TBC team that ensure this program reaches you, our cherished listeners.
All right. Thank you there very much, Doctor, and catch you on Monday, God's willing. All right.
Be safe, everyone. Take care, Bass.
You too. You've been listening to The Lunchtime Doctor here on Freedom 106.5 FM, Sangeet 106.1 FM, Vibe City 105, and of course Sky 99.5 FM. Do enjoy the rest of your day.
Talk is streaming at freedom106.5.com.